Yesterday saw the launch of the Seafood and Meat Exports to the EU report from the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs Committee. One of the issues examined by the committee was the export of live bivalve mollusks from Class B waters in the UK. Since the 1st of January 2021, UK producers of LBMs in Class B and C waters have been unable to export their product to their traditional EU markets due to the EU Commission's decision that they do not accept LBMs harvested from Class B or C waters in third countries. Since the UK has left the EU, it is now a third country and the EU is applying this rule to its LBMs. In September 2019, DEFRA told the Shellfish Association of Great Britain, who in turn told their members that LBMs harvested from aquaculture in Class B and C waters would not be affected by the ban. After the EU ban came into place, the Secretary for State, George Eustace, claimed that the EU had reneged on the gentleman's agreement, which would allow the UK to continue imports as normal. But at the beginning of March, it was revealed in a letter from Mr. Eustace to MPs that he had been aware of the ban as far back as December the 10th, 2020. What is the truth? That has yet to be uncovered, but what about those affected by the ban? The Fishing Daily spoke to John Holmert of Offshore Shellfish, which is a family-run business which has been involved in the seafood industry for more than 25 years. Offshore Shellfish are building the UK's first large-scale, fully offshore, rope-cultured mussel farm off the south coast of Devon, but are experiencing the sharp end of Brexit. So, John, what's happened to your business since the 1st of January this year?
We've not been able to do our business, basically, which involves exporting mussels to Europe. We've been completely stopped since the beginning of January. So that's essentially 95% of our business gone.
And February, March and April are the best time of the year for mussel harvesting. And how long do you think it's sustainable?
For us, we normally finish by sort of mid-March because we then go into sort of spawning period, you know. So we wouldn't normally expect to be selling much during the summer because they're spawning or recovering from spawning. But our main production period is from September through to sort of mid-end of March, so autumn, winter and spring. And that's when we're Category B or Class B waters, and that's when we're not allowed to send stuff to Europe anymore.
Waters in South Devon, when are they changed to Class A waters? Is it summertime, is it?
It varies from site to site. I mean, our particular site, we've got two sites. One is Class A from June, I think it is, to end of September. And the other one is Class A from end of March to the end of September. I mean, this changes from year to year, depending on what the readings have been. But that's the general pattern for us.
What are the expenses involved in running such a business? Like, there must be a huge outlay every year.
There is, yeah. We've got two vessels. One's 25-metre catamaran, and the other one's a 15-metre catamaran. We've got 16 employees. We have all the normal, obviously, wages, rent, fuel, maintenance, all the normal things you'd imagine. And all those costs continue. It makes very little difference to our costs whether we're harvesting or not harvesting, because most of our costs, like any farming enterprise, is involved in producing the crop rather than harvesting it. So we've got to carry on doing all the maintenance work, but we're not going to be able to harvest, as I said. But you know, our main harvest is later in the autumn. But at the moment, we're having to put in a lot of investment to maintain a crop that, at the moment, we've got no chance of selling.
And you've not been able to cut back on staff, or you haven't let anybody go since January?
No. As I say, the workload hasn't changed at all, because, as I say, it's fine. It's like any farming enterprise. Your main work goes on a long time before you actually get to the harvest. At the moment, what we're doing is putting out seed collector ropes for seed to be spread out later in the year for harvesting in 2022, 2023. So, you know, we're busy building a crop at the moment that we have no knowledge of whether we're going to be able to sell it or not. Whereas the, you know, the main crop we've already grown is not quite to full size yet. That's what we'll start harvesting later in the summer. And we can't harvest that either at the moment, or as the rules stand. So unless the rules change, then we're going out of business. But in the meantime, we're having to hope that the rules do change. And we're busy spending money, but it's becoming very, very difficult to justify what we're doing with the rules as they stand, you know.
There's a lot of controversy around the government's stance on the LBMs. They're saying that the EU has reneged on a gentleman's agreement, but yet now George Eustace, in a letter from December last year, had known about the ban coming into place. Was the industry aware of this coming at all, or was it out of the blue in January?
We've been assured back in the middle of 2019, because we were concerned when we were coming up to the first potential Brexit date, we were concerned about the fact that, you know, the rules don't allow third countries to export grade B mussels. So we had, you know, we had asked the government to figure out what was going to happen, and they came back with an absolute assurance in writing several times to all of us that under any circumstances, even a hard Brexit with no deal, we would still be able to export grade B mussels. Now, they based that assumption on some very, very flimsy evidence. I think, essentially, they did not ask the EU the right questions, and they did not run it past the industry, who do understand the rules. All they would say to us is, no, everything's fine, you're going to be able to export. So I guess we're entitled to take our government's word for things, that yes, everything's going to be fine. So for the last 2 years, we've been, you know, investing in a business which we didn't know was going to be shut on 1st of January. I guess our position is our government should have known, and if they have had an agreement which has been reneged on by the EU, in that case, they ought to take the EU to court. But there's no sign of that yet. I mean, they say that they still say that they think their case is right, although I don't know if you've seen the findings of the recent EFRA committee, the Government Select Committee, which has been published yesterday, giving the committee's report on this, pretty much saying, well, it looks like the government didn't do their own work properly.
And if you'd have known, and companies that in your position, if they would have known that this ban was coming in, what would you have done differently?
Very difficult to know, unless you knew absolutely 2 years in advance. If you remember, we had a number of potential Brexit dates. It was on, off, on, off, on, off. We had a change of government, or change of party leader, and it was politically complete chaos here at the moment. So it was really difficult to say, okay, we know absolutely something or other is going to happen, when, you know, we didn't even know what government we were going to have the next month. So it's difficult to know, even in hindsight, what we would have done differently, but had we known, absolutely, definitely, we would not be able to continue, then I suppose we could have pressed hard for some sort of derogation, some sort of deal to be done, in the same way that, you know, there's a derogation on the SPS regulations for stuff coming into the EU, into the UK from the EU. We could have perhaps asked for one in the other direction, but nothing was done. As far as the business is concerned, it's really difficult to know, but I mean, we had the option of not spending 2 years investing in our farm, investing in new crew, and investing in a crop that we can't harvest. We could have to a farm, put it in a different country with decent water.
And is there anything, in your opinion, you think that can be done to resolve this situation now at the moment?
Well, the quickest, simplest one is to ask for a temporary derogation on these regulations, to go back to where we were before Brexit. Nobody needs to admit that they were right or wrong or otherwise. We just have a temporary derogation while things can be sorted out, because obviously this is going to take some time to sort out. that obviously requires both sides to speak to each other. I'm not entirely sure that's going to happen. The second thing we can do is to have a look at the water classification system. We use obviously exactly the same system as the rest of Europe because we've been part of it for 30 years. But there's a lot of room for interpretation within the regulations, quite how different aspects of it are interpreted. We tend to interpret them strictly in this country, and it doesn't really make any sense from a health protection point of view. There seems to be no sort of proper risk analysis. In other words, I can go 15 months with absolutely class A readings and then get one that's a tiny bit over the edge, and then for the next 3 years, that month and the following month, and probably the previous month as well, for the following 3 years, would classify as grade B. So it doesn't make any sense at all. You get one poor reading or one slightly over the edge reading, but 3 years down the road, you're still being restricted by that reading. It doesn't make any sense at all.
That sounds far too restrictive. And
yeah.
And your exporters, or the people who imported your product into the EU, have you been in touch with them? What's their feelings about the ban?
They're really upset about it because they rely on our product. It's all part of their business. They obviously make money from selling it. We mostly export into Holland, but in the past we've also exported to processors in Ireland, and I've had them on the phone saying, you know, this is really bad. We export a little bit into France, and you know, there's potential for other mussel importing countries like Spain and Italy occasionally to make sales there. We haven't in the past, but that potential is now gone. But as I say, our main destination for our mussels is into the processing hub in Ierseke in the Netherlands, and from there going into Belgium and France and wherever else. And so, yeah, it's really hurting our customers. And I know they're making representations to their own government and also to the Commission. So, yeah, there is action happening on the other side of the water as well.
Is there anything else the EU and the UK government should know about the current situation?
I think our problems have stemmed from a lack of understanding on the part of our government department, who ought to have understood our industry but haven't. And I'm not entirely sure they still, you know, they do now. I mean, I'm hopeful that all the pressure that's been brought has made them actually look at our industry to try and understand. But I think it's just a general ignorance of our industry. We're not the biggest industry in the world, and perhaps they don't consider us important enough to listen. But it's not like we haven't told them that we were worried about this, and we were given assurances that everything would be fine, but I think they just did not understand the problem. They didn't ask the right questions. They didn't interpret the answers properly, and they didn't do their job properly. I mean, ultimately, what is a government department for? It's there to protect the interests of your industry, and they didn't do it.
That's a big letdown for the industry.
Yeah, I mean, they're coming up with solutions now for some of the people caught in the situation my company is caught in. There are perhaps technical answers or even economic answers. It is possible to perhaps install purification on this side of the water for some things, but installing purification for rope grown mussels in the UK and then putting them through that process make it worthwhile. And quite simply, the customer won't buy them. They don't want to buy mussels that have already lost part of their shelf life. So they want to buy ones that haven't been depurated, they haven't been graded or anything else like that. They just want to buy the raw product so they can do it themselves. And that gives a much better end product to the customer. And that's the main cause of the problem with. So technical answer for that may suit say oyster growers or even cockle growers, where I know I'm not an expert in their subject, but it doesn't suit us. And the other suggestion from our minister is to find alternative markets. Well, well, where? You know, there isn't another convenient continent for me to ship 40-ton loads of live wet mussels to. You know, it's just a nonsense to say find an alternative market. We produce, I mean, what's on our farm at the moment, if we put it on the UK market, it just wouldn't get sold because there's not the demand.
A lot of fresh produce, it's sold to your, in your country or to your neighbouring countries. It's not something that you can really export to China or Australia. So there's no point in talking about deals to China or Australia when it has to be live and fresh, delivered to the people you're selling it to.
That's it. Yeah. The business we're in is the production of live mussels for a just-in-time market. We don't produce processed mussels. I mean, you know, if we were to have done that, well, maybe that's one of the things we could have set in train 2 years ago if we had the time. But, you know, you're talking about building a factory, which, first of all, you've got to find a place for it, then you've got to find the money for it, then you've got to find do the process, and then you've got to find the customers for it. And we're just not in that business. The customer base for processed mussels is an entirely different one from the customer base for just-in-time, high-quality, rope-grown, fresh, live mussels. It's a different market. You can't suddenly switch one to the other. It's a bit like telling every potato farmer you can't sell fresh potatoes anymore. He's got to sell crisps, you know? Well, given 5 years and a load of money, you could probably get around to it, but it's not something you can do in the space of a few months.
Yeah.
And a large portion of the value of our company is livestock sitting on the lines right now. So we simply can't raise money on the basis of that. We just haven't got the time, and we haven't got the market for it.
Yeah, well, John, I hope that come to some solution, because it looks like both sides, the exporters from the UK and the importers on the EU side, want something done about this, but it's about banging heads together and getting to work out a good, go back, well, it's not even, they don't have to change it that much, do they? They just have to go back to the way it was, which makes perfect sense.
That's it. I mean, I know that would then, put them in the position if they're, you know, the WTO rules might not be sort of complied with. But I mean, there's plenty of cases of that. All you've got to do is write yourself a derogation for it. It's called a trade deal. It just needs a bit of time for people to sit down and do it. We just don't seem to have the appetite for doing it. And I think behind all that is the basic politics of the UK can't admit that Brexit was a really stupid idea, and the EU can't let it be seen that leaving the EU is a good thing. You know, so we've got two completely opposing attitudes there, and I don't quite see how they're going to resolve those two if they just keep insisting on holding their opinion on these things. Sometimes, if you want things to work, negotiations are going to start from a new place. You know, they can't go back to the same old argument all the time. You don't get anywhere, and you know, we've seen that in so many situations, whether it be trade or, you know, things like the border issues and so on. There, it's, you know, unless people put things to rest from the past and start again, then nothing's going to come to anything. And I think that's really what needs to happen. We need our ministers to stop saying Brexit is fantastic and everything is rosy. And admit that, you know, some things aren't quite as rosy as they wanted. Perhaps the EU have got to pull their heads in a little bit and stop trying to point out that life outside the EU is absolutely dreadful. I mean, as ever, the truth somewhere in between, you know?